You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. Welcome to episode 294, and in this one I chat with John Hirschfield, who is a psychotherapist who specializes in the treatment of OCD. He's also been on the show many times, so I'm sure a lot of you would have heard one of his episodes before. But in this one we get an update on John, what's new of him. We discuss false memory OCD and real event OCD. We talk about the problem with compulsively reviewing memories or thoughts, how this theme of OCD links into moral scrupulosity, some of the compulsions linked to this theme, dealing with the uncertainty, rumination, when you're worried to go to therapy, mindfulness around this theme, why the difference between a false memory or a real one doesn't matter, and why we shouldn't try and figure it out, why drinking alcohol can make OCD worse, and much more. And thanks always to NoCD for supporting the show. I deeply appreciate it. If you want to find out more about NoCD and their therapy services, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. So thank you to John for his time on this topic. I really appreciate it. And thank you to you guys for listening. As always, it means a lot. Without further ado, here's John. Welcome back to the show, John.
Happy to be here. Always good to see you, Stu.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. And I guess before we get into today's topic of false memory OCD, any updates on you? Anything new since we've last spoken?
Oh, you know me. I just work all the time. So right now I'm working on a new book about how to sort of tackle unwanted intrusive thoughts and difficult emotions at the same time, by combining ERP and DBT skills. Okay. Working on that with a colleague who's an expert in DBT. So that should come out sometime in the next year and a half or 2 years or so. So that's in addition to my work as a clinician in the outpatient and now in the residential arena. I have that keeping me busy on the weekends.
Absolutely. And obviously we did the AMA like maybe March this year about your workbook for teens.
Yes, that is out there, as is also relatively recent, the second edition of the mindfulness workbook for OCD.
Yeah, cool.
Now in a bunch of different languages.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm getting these things in the mail. If anybody out there speaks Korean, Japanese, Polish, a couple other languages. I just have these stacks of books. I don't know what to do with them. I need to find a place to donate them.
Cool. Well, yeah, I'm sure I have a few listeners that can speak those. It's also great that they're being translated, because that means it probably sold in English and then they think there's going to be a demand in these other languages. What was I going to say? So yeah, what's it been like working in residential now? Because obviously, from what I understand of your history, you've been primarily outpatient when you were private practice. So has it been quite a transition to go into residential?
Yeah, it's been really interesting because I'm working with a much larger team of experts and a much wider variety of mental health issues. So people come into our program and we give them 9 hours a week of one-on-one OCD therapy. Mm. And then they're also getting all this other therapy that's, you know, conducive to their needs, is sort of designed around their needs. Mm. In this really, really pleasant environment. What's really fascinating about it for me is getting exposure to all the different conditions that people have, that in outpatient, I would say, well, I don't know how to treat that, or I don't know what that is, or you'll have to go see somebody else for that. And now I'm actually able to witness how people have comorbid conditions, you know, multiple conditions, how they really interact with one another, right? So having OCD and depression, that's something I'm familiar with. You know, having OCD and depression and let's say trauma or personality disorder, how does the trauma or the personality disorder inform the OCD? How does that ultimately, you know, lead to the behavior that the person is feeling compelled to do? So I'm just, every day I love going to work because every day I learn something.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. So let's get into it. False memory. What is it?
Yeah, what is it? People don't really seem to know for sure. You know, I started hearing that term false memory from my clients. And so I think I have false memory OCD, or I'm having false memories. So I went and I looked it up. And there's a thing called false memories, and it's pretty much what it sounds like. So it's a thought that you experience as a memory. So what is a memory? A memory is a thought about something that you experienced, right? So I had breakfast this morning, and now I'm thinking about my breakfast, and that thought about my breakfast is a memory. And a false memory would be a thought about something that you experienced that did not happen. Or I would say in the case of OCD, either did not happen or did not happen the way you think it happened. Most of what people have described to me as, you know, so-called false memory OCD is they'll have a thought about having done a bad act or an inappropriate act. Maybe it's something sexual or something violent. And the thought will pop into their head like any other kind of OCD intrusive thought, but it will feel like something that happened, as opposed to it feeling like something that could happen, or that they worry that they might want it to happen. So it doesn't feel future-based or theoretical, it feels historical. Mm-hmm. And that feeling of history is what's really causing the anxiety of, oh no, what if that did happen? That did happen, and then they wanna go back and check. So first thing that's important to remember, of course, is we come up with names for things to help people communicate, but these aren't different diagnoses, right? So false memory OCD is just OCD about, you know, this particular kind of thought. You could say something like hit and run OCD, for example, it might be a form of false memory OCD, right? So I'm having a thought that I hit somebody with my car. If that thought feels like a memory as opposed to just a potential theory, then you might say, well, that's kind of a false memory. Mm-hmm. You know, most of what I heard, again, is something sort of like, you know, I used a public restroom and then I was minding my business. And then a day later, I had the thought that I had seen someone in that restroom and touched them inappropriately. And I don't know where that thought came from, but it really felt like I had done it. And now I really need to start try to figure out, did I do it? And if I did, what does that mean about me? As it turns out, there's a little bit of research into this, and people with OCD do seem to have more of what are called false memories. It has something to do with the way in which people with OCD identify what a memory is. So I found this one study that basically said that the person with OCD is more likely to determine the authenticity of a memory based on how it feels. Right? And we know emotional reasoning is a big part of OCD. Yeah. So if you have a thought and it feels like a memory, you're very much likely to sort of tag it as a memory, whether it happened or not. Mm. And of course, the other problem with OCD is you compulsively review anything over and over and over again, and it's kind of like wearing out a tape. It starts to become more and more distorted. So what was first, you know, just a random thought that felt like a memory, now you've played it over so many times, it starts to feel more and more like a memory. Your healthy doubt about it just being a thought gets kind of burnt out, and you start to become more and more convinced, and your insight starts to go down. So people not only fear, what if this is a memory, they can also come to fear, what if I become convinced that it's a memory, and I just end up ruining my life because I'm convinced that I don't know, murdered somebody and I didn't, which is in a way just as painful as always wondering if you had hurt somebody.
Yeah, very, yeah, good point. The bit, and that a study you mentioned, I think you reference in the article you wrote, which I'll link in the show notes, that article on false memory OCD. But I like the bit about, yeah, the emotion being there, and if the emotion's there, then it must be a real memory, whatever. I'm doing speech marks on my fingers.
Right.
But obviously that doesn't prove anything, you know?
Well, it's an assumption, right? So yeah. A lot of OCD, we make these assumptions. You know, I'm anxious, therefore something bad's about to happen. Or I feel guilty, therefore I must have done something wrong. There's this other terminology that people use sometimes called real event OCD, which usually means you had an experience in your past that you feel uncomfortable about. And you're having trouble letting go of rumination over the significance of that experience. You know, what does it mean about me? Why did it happen? Is there something I can do to fix it in some way? So there's a bit of a crossover here, because with false memory OCD, It can mean you're obsessed with a thought that you're confusing as a memory, and now you're worried that you did something that absolutely you did not do. And there's no way you did it, but still it feels like you could have, and you get confused. Or it could be you had an experience that was one way, and then you had the thought that it was another. Yeah. So there's some confusion over your memory of the real event. You know, when I did this thing that wasn't catastrophic, like a common example might be, you know, when I kissed my girlfriend in college or something like that. And then I have the thought, wait, did I ever force myself upon her? And then you might get an unwanted intrusive image in your head about having done that, when in fact you didn't do it. So it's a false memory, but it's based on a real event, which is, there was a kissing event that took place, but now your OCD has you all confused. Which part of it is the memory of what happened?
Yeah.
And which part of it is my OCD, you know, basically doing a dirty remix of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's been so much, at least in the UK, so much press coverage in the last decade around particular trends that aren't, not trends, topics around bad behavior. For example, the Me Too movement, which was big in the States too. And rightly that needed coverage and exposing. But for anyone, you know, who then may look back at their history and be like, oh, when I kissed that my girlfriend back in college, was it, did she consent? Did you know, I can see how it must have been so triggering the last decade because of the amount of coverage.
And then you see compulsions like scouring that individual's, you know, social media to see if their life turned out okay, and you know, things like that. Most of the false memory obsessions that people tell me about are kind of grounded in moral scrupulosity. Yeah. The primary concern here is, did I do a bad thing? And does that make me a bad person? And the specific content of that so-called bad thing that makes you a so-called bad person, in the case of false memories, just happens to be a random thought about something you didn't do or didn't do the way you had a thought about doing it. And you're confused because it feels real. It feels like a memory. And so you're applying emotional reasoning to an unwanted intrusive thought about the past. And the more compulsions you do to try to get certainty, of course, the more you're sending the signal to your brain that this is an investigation worth pursuing, which then zaps your confidence and it gets progressively worse until, of course, you get treatment. But it's usually morally based, in my experience.
Yeah, that's going to be one of my questions, because, well, actually, on moral scrupulosity, you and I did an episode back at the start of the pandemic. So it was moral scrupulosity around COVID. But if anyone's interested in moral scrupulosity, I still think it's relevant. And I'm sure it'd be exposure to go back and listen to an episode that was recorded when we were all incredibly anxious about COVID back in 2020. Obviously, some people still are. I don't want to take away from that. But and the other thing, I have done an episode on real events, so I'll link to that in the show notes. But now that I've thrown myself off, what was my question? Yeah, moral scrupulosity was going to be one of my questions, because, as you said, in your experience, a lot of people do seem to have moral scrupulosity or be morally focused. And is it that these particular people are naturally more inclined to worry about right and wrong and good versus evil? And then that's where this kind of reviewing memories comes in.
Yeah, that's been my experience. And I mean, it's been my experience with not all people with OCD, but many, I would say maybe even most people with OCD. I mean, one of the things we know that is different about people with OCD is not the content of their thoughts. I mean, people with OCD think that nobody is having these sort of wacky, zany thoughts, but in fact, other people are having them. They just don't think they're particularly interesting or important. You know, they're able to relate to them like this kind of mental junk mail that they are. Whereas someone with OCD might tag a particular thought as important and feel a moral responsibility to address it. So the question comes up of, who am I to take the risk of just disregarding this and calling it spam and moving along, right? Yeah. What makes me so great that I can say, I probably didn't hit somebody with my car, or this thought about molesting somebody in the bathroom, that's probably just a false memory nonsense. Like, what gives me the right to make that choice? Mm-hmm. So it's that lack of self-compassion and self-confidence and kind of an excess of empathy for things that aren't even real, right? That you feel badly for whoever it is you didn't harm. And so you feel like you have to do something about that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the idea that comes to my mind is, if someone is worried about right versus wrong, and obviously these terms are so, it's a philosophical question that I don't think has ever been answered because it's so like subjective. But which maybe that will trigger people, but the idea of, I'm, for example, let's say I'm trying to recover from this theme of OCD called false memory. The idea of almost working through it to let go of the worry or the false memory or the real event based false memory. I guess my question is like you said, who am I to kind of not pay attention to this? Cause what if I have harmed someone, you know, that then makes me a bad person trying to just ignore it like it's junk mail, you know? So I guess that must come up. How do you kind of address that?
Well, first of all, there's a flip side to it. I mean, you know, who are you to be entitled to certainty? Mm. None of the rest of us get that, right? What makes you so special that you get the answers to these questions? I really like the way Reed Wilson has put it in terms of getting away from, okay, maybe I did this bad thing. Maybe I didn't. Maybe it's false memory. Maybe it's real memory. I can handle the uncertainty. And just getting straight to the heart of the matter, which is there's something you're uncertain about. It's hard. It's uncomfortable. Okay. That's your job, is to deal with that difficult feeling, right? That comes up. That's part of living with this disorder. And the more you commit to that, and with the attitude of I'm choosing to commit to that, right? The better off you'll be. Then there's nothing to ruminate about. It's just the feeling of uncertainty is hard. And, you know, just like feelings of anxiety or other feelings that are challenging can be hard to cope with. And you might have various skills for coping with them that don't involve getting wrapped up in the content. Because again, your brain doesn't know you have OCD. So it assumes everything you're doing for a perfectly good reason, right? So if you have a thought and then your OCD says, oh, that's not just a thought. That's a memory of something bad you did. You need to figure that out. And then you go and you try to figure it out, your brain is going to assume that this is a good idea and that there's something to figure out, which is going to then strengthen the idea internally that this isn't just one of those thoughts you have all the time. This is probably a big deal. This is probably a memory. Why else would you review it?
Yeah.
And so you end up stuck in that loop. Whereas if you're able to say, yeah, all right, well, that's uncomfortable. I'm going to take the risk of treating that like OCD and move along, and then I'm going to deal with that discomfort. You'll probably do a lot better than if you start engaging in rumination.
Mm. Yeah, really, really good point. Yeah, as you say, seeing it as similar to contamination worries or harm worries, or it's no different if we view it from the OCD lens.
I think the first step in treating any particular theme of OCD, well, let me walk that back a little bit. It's not the first step. It's one of the first steps in treating any particular theme of OCD is to stop treating it like it's special, right? It's to treat it like it's OCD, like any other OCD, right? And contamination OCD is a good example, right? You're concerned about your life narrative or your morality being contaminated. You want it to be perfectly squeaky clean, and it doesn't feel that way right now, and you're trying to fix it. So it is no different than washing your hands. You're just trying to wash your thoughts or your memories or something like that. And the reason why I walk that back a little bit is I do think certain types of content hit people in different ways based on their life narrative. So there might be a lot of shame around the particular content of your so-called false memory. And that might need to be addressed and worked through, but not by trying to figure out if it's a real memory or not, right? It might be by addressing the fact that it makes sense that the idea that you could have done this terrible thing is hitting you really, really hard. Right? That is a really painful idea. Let's work through that pain. And then let's get to the place where you can start treating the content around that pain the way you treat all of your other OCD issues. Instead of getting so focused on like, well, this is my harm OCD, and this is my scrupulosity, and this is my sexual orientation OCD. It's OCD, it's OCD, it's OCD. Maybe we can't always start there, but we should be striving to get there at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So same person, just different outfits almost with the way I look at themes. I usually say masks, but outfits came to my mind today. So I guess I can imagine, I don't know if this is a problem. I can imagine it maybe for some people. Let's say false memory or real event is their main theme. It's the one that kind of tortures them the most. But they worry about going for treatment, because what happens if I have to tell them kind of what I'm really worried about, or, you know, the vague thing that actually happened in my past, but my brain's, I think, is warping it, but I'm not sure. But I'm terrified of telling you, John, what my, that thing that you, what happens if you say I'm a horrible monster, or, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is a problem in most forms of taboo kind of themes. Yeah, of OCD, right? So nobody wants to have some kind of mandated report happen, you know, somebody has to call a social worker or the police or something like that to address concern that a child is being harmed or that someone's going to harm somebody else or something like that. So it's scary out there for people with OCD entrusting these really painful, you know, things that cut to the core with a stranger. Right. Yeah. So obviously your best bet is to start with somebody who's a specialist in OCD. And if you're not sure if it's OCD, you know, because that might be part of your OCD, what we usually tell people is treat it like it's your OCD anyway. Let's just see what happens. So you'll probably be fine, but whatever, that's about it. The most amount of research I can give you is at least start with somebody you have some reason to think knows what they're talking about. Yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, speaking from the clinician perspective, someone will tell me like, well, I think I'm a bad person because of all these really bad things I've done. Mm-hmm. And I start thinking, I wonder what they're referring to, right? Because my assumption is that most people are good or striving to be good. That doesn't mean that they're perfect. But sometimes people get so wrapped up in this that they're like, no, you don't understand the things I've done. You know, it starts to feel like I'm in a movie, you know, and they're telling me about these list of crimes. So I might occasionally ask for a sample, right? Why don't you give me an example of one of these like terrible things you did? And after I've heard, you know, one or two of them, I mean, in my experience, 100% of the time, it's been like, yeah, that is a gross magnification of morale of the morality around that scene. You know, you drank too much and you don't remember what happened. That's a story about nothing. That's not a story about having hurt somebody. Yeah. So after I get, you know, occasionally I might kind of look under the hood a little bit to see like, what is this person really talking about? Once I've cleared OCD, I don't want to hear anything else. I don't want to hear more about it, because then it's just feeding this idea that we should be looking into the past for the answers. Mm. Present is where the answers are always at in the end, right? Mm. Sometimes we have to look at the past to make sense of our life narrative, but that's the function of that, is to figure out what to do in the present. So anyway, long-winded way of saying, if you have false memory obsessions and you're concerned that you're going to share them and the therapist is going to mishandle them in some way, you know, the best thing you do is at least start with somebody that has experience in treating OCD, right? If you're thinking, I can't let go right now of the uncertainty around these thoughts that feel like memories, that feel like I did something bad, I'm going to go ahead and call that an OCD process, whether you've been diagnosed or not. Right? It's obsessive in that you're dealing with unwanted intrusive thoughts. It's compulsive in that you keep doing the same thing over and over again, and it's not making it better. It's making it worse. So I don't need to diagnose you without meeting you, but I can at least say, based on that, it's worth talking to an OCD specialist. Let that OCD specialist be a container for you to open up about these things and then take it from there.
Yeah, really good points. And I don't know what you think of this, but like, when I'm working, I mainly work with children and young people, and it's not just OCD, but sometimes I can tell there's been some trauma in the past. And when I'm initially meeting them, I can see that they want to say something, but I kind of say, look, you don't have to share it with me, you know, right now, just get to know me. And then in time, when you're ready, if you want, you can share it with me. So that kind of like permission of, I guess, from an OCD point of view, is you don't have to go in, tell them your worst fear or obsession. You could start with one that maybe you'd think wouldn't be so bad to share. And then if they respond okay, then go up a level in the scare factor. And, you know, is that something?
Yeah, I think that's totally appropriate. I've had plenty of clients reveal darker, more violent, more sexual, more morality themed OCD to me months into treatment. You know, mm-hmm. we were working on hand washing or something like that. And then later they're like, okay, I really need to tell you that a huge part of my life that I've been afraid to talk about is actually this, you know. Now I understand that it's OCD, but it's still hard to talk about.
Yeah.
So I think taking a hierarchical approach is perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. That's a kind of ERP, isn't it? To sort of get yourself to a place where you feel like you can handle revealing that to your therapist. The only caution I would add there is you want to walk that balance of, you know, opening up when you're ready against waiting too long, in the sense of the longer you wait, the more you're sending the signal to your brain that you're waiting for a really good reason and that this is a big reveal.
Yeah.
And I'm still waiting for that moment where I'm going to be impressed by what somebody says, you know, in terms of the horribleness of their intrusive thoughts. I waited for that moment with my own therapist and it never came. So I suspect it's not out there.
Yeah, no, really, really very good point. So you've talked about obsessions, and I think that's been quite, or intrusive thoughts, I think that's been quite clear, hopefully, for the listeners. And you have mentioned compulsions, but it'd be good to just, for me to ask you the question, what are the common compulsions around this theme?
Yeah, well, like with other themes with OCD, the most common compulsion are going to be various forms of mental rituals. So rumination, which is bringing up the thought, AKA false memory, and you know, trying to re-digest it, to make sense of it, to figure it out, to put it to bed, to say, this is definitely not a memory. It's definitely my OCD. Or if you're just trying to get away from the uncertainty, you might be trying to prove the opposite of it, but just trying to get away from that uncertainty. You might have a variety of mental rituals aimed at kind of blocking the thoughts from happening. You know, the thought comes up and you try to replace it with another thought that suppresses it or reassures you. There's obviously seeking reassurance is going to be a big one. So asking other people, you know, how do I know, is this a false memory? Is this a real memory? Is this just a thought? You know, or kind of indirectly, like, you know, if a person ever did this thing, what would you think about them? You'd think that they're an okay person who makes mistakes. Okay, good. That's comforting, right? So sort of testing the waters to see, like, well, if it is a memory and not just an intrusive thought, am I going to be able to survive? You know, reassurance seeking, other things that might come up there, what might be, I think I mentioned this before, sort of scouring the internet for evidence of the consequences of your imagined misdeed, right? So if you think you might have harmed somebody, looking for information about them online or trying to contact people, you know, you were there at that party, you know, I didn't do anything weird, did I? Like, you would have told me, right? You know, trying to get confirmation that your memories are false. Sometimes excessive rationalization. This is a tricky one. So some rationalization is fine. Like, hey, I have OCD. I have these types of thoughts. I need to let it go. That's a rationalization for letting it go. But really lingering on that and saying it's okay for me not to compulse because, and then you have this whole manifesto about why it's okay not to compulse, but that's compulsive rationalization. What are some other ways? Avoidance, right? Avoidance of things that might trigger the thoughts. Yeah. And in fact, when we're doing exposure therapy, we might intentionally expose the person to just remember that this thought exists. It doesn't have to be some long-winded script necessarily. I mean, scripting could be used in terms of exposing to the fear of, yeah, maybe it's a false memory and it's going to have consequences in my life. I'll have to navigate. But even something like a constant contamination approach, like you just have a post-it note with a letter on it that reminds you, or you have an app on your phone that pushes a message to you once in a while that reminds you of the thought. So you can practice, be like, oh, yep, there's that thought again. No, not going to ruminate, not going to do compulsions. Just like, yep, that's one of the thoughts in my head, la-di-da, right? And moving on. So I think that probably covers the bulk of the compulsions, but you know, people are creative. They will sometimes come up with compulsions that are very far removed from what you think they're trying to accomplish. I've certainly heard people do physical compulsions, for example, to undo these intrusive thoughts. So if I have one of these intrusive thoughts while I'm washing my hands, I might feel compelled to wash my hands again while trying not to have the intrusive thought. That would be very compulsive.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. That was really good. And yeah, let's just stay on ERP then. So you mentioned some examples. Another one that came to my mind when you were talking about avoiding things, like places came to my mind. So avoiding places that maybe the real event or the false memory you think was at that location, that town, that city, that coffee shop. I can imagine going to that place as a way of sort of triggering yourself could be one of the exposures.
Yeah, I think that could be effective exposure. I think you have to be careful, right? Going out of your way to go there to check to see if the memory, if it triggers something, you know, and then being able to determine, if you're trying to get certainty, if you're testing, right, then it's not effective exposure. If you're trying to get triggered so you can practice dealing with the trigger without compulsions, then you're doing ERP. Yeah. Actually, I just remembered another compulsion that comes up is I guess this is part of rumination, but trying to create the environment in which you think the memory could have happened. So this might be acting out the behavior, like miming the behavior, or going to the location where you think the behavior could have occurred to see if it feels familiar, right? Going back to that bathroom stall where your brain is telling you you harmed somebody and looking around trying to see, like, was I standing here in the memory? Was I standing there? You know, does this feel real? And again, it's coming back to that reliance on emotions to determine authenticity. And so I think you have to be careful, because a lot of what looks like exposure is just compulsive testing or promoting rumination. Sometimes it'd be better to just say, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna know. And let it fade on its own. A lot of this is retraining the algorithm in your brain to properly label spam as spam and, you know, important urgent inbox mail as important urgent inbox mail based on how you're relating to it.
Yeah, really good point. I guess disclosure for me, like false memory was the theme that finally pushed me over the edge to get treatment. And it was, that theme was hell on earth for me. Like I can't put it into words. But I guess I wanted to share that because I was doing so many compulsions in the sense of just going over and over again in my head, replaying memories. So it was like loose, a lot of them were loosely based on things, but it was hugely warped. Maybe I was a bad person. I have to throw that in because I don't want to reassure myself. But yeah, I would go over it and then I would kind of figure it out, so to speak. Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm not a bad person. But then my brain would quickly go, yeah, but what about this part of it? And then I'd have to replay it all over again. So I guess what I'm saying is I never found complete certainty. And the more I looked for it, the more to the depths of how I went, you know? So I just wanted to use that as an illustration to show that compulsions just really going to make your life in this case and all worse than they are better.
And memories are not digital photographs.
No.
I mean, the expectation that you could get certainty is a function of the disorder.
Yeah.
Right. You can tell when you're doing a compulsion, when you're doing something that's impossible, right? When the outcome is impossible, that's a good sign that what you're doing is probably a function of your disorder. Yeah. So like, I'm going to review this memory and it's going to give me certainty. Right. But a memory, it's not, you know, if you took a digital photograph of something, you know, a picture of somebody and, you know, in a location, you can bring that up on your computer. You could look at it. It's going to look the same every time. You might notice more details about it every time you look at it, but the picture itself isn't changing. Every time you pull up a memory, every single time you change it, because memories are contextual. Yeah. So they're sort of brain-based recordings of emotional experiences, thoughts, sensations, colors, textures, all of this stuff. It's more like a song than a picture, right? It's a piece of music. It's not a piece of wood. And every time you pull it up in your brain, you're now looking at it through the lens of the current context. Right. And this is an easy experiment to run. I mean, just think about what it's like when you look back on your childhood while feeling really good about yourself. And then think about what it's like when you look back on your childhood while feeling really down in the dumps. And you have the same memories, but they feel totally different to you. Mm. Right. And now imagine repeating that 1,000 times a day, pulling up the same memory over. Well, you know what it was like for you to do, right?
Yeah.
And and this sense of, I like how John Grayson puts it in his book, the sense of going insane while being sane enough to be a witness to the event.
Yeah.
Right. That the kind of inspiration of free falling, but feeling like you shouldn't be falling at all because you're reaching out for the rope and the rope is there, but the rope is a hologram. So, again, this is why self-compassion plays such an essential role in treating OCD because the self-criticism, why can't I get it right? What's wrong with me? It is actually part of the compulsive cycle. It's part of what's keeping you committed to this fake project of certainty seeking.
Yeah, absolutely. So on that kind of self-compassion / mindfulness, I wanted to ask you about, because you're big on mindfulness. Does that play into this? And if so, how?
Well,
as a tool, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't think of mindfulness as a tool so much as I think of it as a perspective.
Okay.
Right? It's not something that we're using. It's something that we're either engaged with or not engaged with. When we're not engaged with mindfulness, it means that we imagine ourselves in the story. So I've used the metaphor before of like an aquarium. You could be at an aquarium on one side of the glass and looking at the sharks and noticing that they're scary and maybe even feeling a little bit scared, but you can stay with it. It's a much different experience than being in the shark tank with the sharks. So to not be mindful is to imagine yourself in that shark tank or in that story. So when we're trying to figure out these thoughts, when we're doing these ruminations and trying to compulsively get certainty about these so-called false memories, that's not being mindful. So we don't use mindfulness to get out of that. What we do is we remember that there is such a thing as being mindful. We remember, no, actually we're on this side of the glass in the aquarium. And so we're a witness to the event. And we can say like, oh, look at that. I'm doing that thing again. Yeah, I don't need to do that right now. Walking away. Right? But again, you can only do that from the outside. When you're in it and you imagine that you're part of the story, it makes it much more difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good point. I always enjoyed that Shark Tank one. Although sharks aren't as mean as we think they are.
I'm sure they're lovely if you just get to know them.
I wouldn't want to be in a tank with them, but I think they get a bad rep. So earlier today I put out on Instagram, I'm doing this episode on false memory, what are your questions? And I got a few come in. The first one, I had this a few times, which was how to tell the difference between a real memory and a false one.
Yeah. Well, that's the rub.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't matter. I know that sounds pretty, basic in a not nice way, but I think, look, a thought is a thought is a thought, whether it's about the past or the future, whether it's real or imagined, we're talking about is a mental event has occurred. Right. So I might suddenly remember that I had committed to doing a favor for somebody. And then that might spur me to then follow through with that. I'd forgotten and I suddenly remembered, right? So there's something about that thought that feels more important than if I suddenly remembered something that didn't have to be acted on. And the problem with OCD is it always feels like it has to be acted on. So again, I think it's a false project trying to get certainty about the kind of thought it is. The larger question is, how do you want to deal with thoughts? How do you want to relate to your thoughts in general? And so when you're having a thought that feels like a memory, and it feels really scary, and you want to know, well, did it happen? Didn't it happen? I think you just need to take a big step back and be like, okay, I had a thought. What's going on right in front of me right now? Am I in the middle of eating a meal? Am I in the middle of having an important conversation with a friend? Right? What should I really be attending to right now? Just the content of my thoughts or the experience that I'm having in real life? And if you're not sure, why don't you just err on the side of the experience? Right? Instead of erring on the side of the story. So I know that's not an answer to the question of how do you tell the difference between a false memory and a real one, because the answer is that there is no answer. But the question underneath that is, should I be trying to do this? And I think probably not.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good answer. And if you're trying to figure out the difference, you're compulsing.
Right.
And
how do I know if I really want to hurt somebody? If really am of this, sexual predisposition or something like that? How do I really know? Right. Those are OCD prompts.
Yeah, absolutely. And then another one that came in was, why are my anxieties worse after a night of drinking and not remembering? Drinking as in alcohol.
Yeah. Well, there's a few answers to that question. One is, not really my scope of expertise, but it's pretty clear that drinking is a central nervous system depressant. And when you metabolize it, like when you metabolize anything, it creates an exhaust, and that exhaust is agitation. So it's very, very common, whether you have OCD or not, to feel agitated, activated, anxious, uncomfortable, irritable the day after drinking, because it's actually an effect of your body processing the alcohol.
Yeah.
The other issue, of course, is that alcohol does interfere in memory collection and retaining memories. And if you already are a person who has a lot of difficulty letting go of uncertainty, now you're giving yourself more reasons to be uncertain. And for the person who's asking this question, I should point out that a significant portion of the people who've come to me with false memories, their false memories and obsessions involve alcohol. Not all of them, but enough that I'm like, this is a repetition here. Yeah. I'm not here to moralize about whether or not people should drink, but if you're drinking to the point that you're really having significant memory gaps, you might want to take a look at how you're treating your body and your brain. And if you have OCD, the OCD goes after the lowest hanging fruit, right? It goes after the things that you care the most about and the things that are easiest to reach. Yeah. And so if you can't remember what you did last night, and you really care about being a good person in this really excessive way, well, that's a recipe for waking up obsessing. Mm-hmm. I would add that even if we scaled it back a little bit, let's say you didn't drink to the point of forgetting, but you did drink. And so you don't know if you forgot something. It's possible, right? You might have, we always forget things. That's part of the human experience. You're not a robot perfectly recording everything. So it's also very common to wake up the next morning, really from any event, but particularly any event that might have involved alcohol or substance use, and immediately have a wave of intrusive thoughts of, oh my goodness, what did I do? And this is part of the human experience. I don't think it's exclusive to OCD. Again, like I said at the beginning of this discussion, what really separates people from OCD isn't the content of their thoughts, it's how they're responding to it. And the way you're likely to respond to it if you have OCD is to take on a sense of moral responsibility for knowing for sure what you did.
Yeah.
So be careful out there, and however it is that you behave when you wake up the next morning and you're having OCD intrusive thoughts, again, start with self-compassion, start with mindfulness, start with this is hard. And then, don't lie there in bed ruminating, get out of bed, get your brain working again, right? Mm-hmm. Metabolize the rest of what's in your system by engaging in tasks and re-engaging with the present.
Yeah, really good point. I have a couple of friends in Ireland, and they have as far as I'm aware, they don't have OCD, and they have a term for this experience of the hangover, and they call it the fear. That the idea of when you wake up and you're just terrified of, what did I do? You got that drunk.
Yeah, amazing. So the Irish came up with a name for it, huh?
Right, I can't pin it on all Irish, but yeah, the ones I know.
That's wonderful.
So I just think it just shows you, if it's that bad and that scary for the general population, you throw OCD on top of that, it's a storm.
Like other OCD things, it's a normal experience when there's some reason to doubt your memories from the night before, to wonder, did something bad happen? But then you add OCD to that, it's gas on a fire.
Yeah, exactly. And I think even if you have a few drinks, you can still wake up with that extra doubt, because it depends how much you can drink. But after a few, you just start to lose a real grasp of time and reality. And, so I don't think you have to get blackout drunk for it to happen.
Well, and you also don't have to drink at all. This is drinking just is more ammo for the OCD. Yeah. I mean, just having a social experience can be a whirlwind for most people, for a lot of people. True. Right? How many people did I talk to? Did I meet this person? Mm-hmm. Back in the day when we would go to conferences and in real life, and I would shake a bunch of people's hands and meet a whole bunch of people. And, some point later I'd get an email and say, oh, hey, it was good meeting you. And I'm like, yeah, it was good meeting you too. I guess, you know, like,
thanks for a wonderful night.
Yeah. Well, I haven't gotten any of those emails, but, okay. But again, it's yeah. normal not to be able to remember everything, and it's OCD to think that you are responsible to try to do so, including things that could be really, really bad.
Yeah, I agreed. Next question is, is there anything you want to say on like self-compassion around this topic?
Well, the thing I always say about self-compassion on any topic, and it's, again, I think of false memory OCD as really a kind of moral scrupulosity, right? Because it's a moral quandary, not being able to figure out whether or not something terrible happened, whether it was just a thought or a memory. Mm. Is that self-compassion is practical, right? It's not about being nice or warm or friendly. It's about being honest and using critical thinking about how to address a concern. Mm. Self-criticism is name calling. It's sort of inherently dishonest. It's saying I know something that I don't know, like I'm a bad person, you know, I'm a loser and I should hate myself. These are all assumptions.
Yeah.
Right. And self-compassion is really more grounded in objective fact. I'm having thoughts and they scare me. And a lot of people have thoughts that scare them, especially with OCD. And the question we're trying to answer here is what would be helpful? Right. And the OCD is jumping up and down, waving its hand, saying, you should review it. That's what would be helpful. You should get certainty about that. That would be helpful. Mm. No, that's not true. Right. What would actually be helpful? Right. Do you need to talk to your therapist and come up with an ERP plan? Do you already kind of know what to do, but you're afraid to do it? And you need to give it a shot by, putting your phone down and actually re-engaging with the next task. What would be helpful? That's all self-compassion is. It's asking, yeah, but right now, what would actually be helpful?
I like that. Okay, slight change of speed. What's your favorite quote or one that you really like at the minute?
I really like quotes within quotes when they look like apostrophes.
Okay.
But I don't think that's what you're asking
about. No.
You always do this to me. You get, what am I going to put on a billboard? What am I put on a favorite? I don't have a favorite quote. I do remember when I was a kid. I'll go with this one. Yeah. There was a movie from the early 90s called Pump Up the Volume about a ham DJ, Christian Slater. And he often said, so be it. He'd give this like rant and he'd say, so be it. And for some reason, this was before I really knew anything about OCD. I mean, I think I must have been like 11 or 12. I decided to print out the word so be it in big letters on this like old sort of matrixy printer, you know, and then put it up on the wall of my room. And I had that up in my room when I was a kid, before I knew what I was in for. There was something in me that said, I'm going to need this quote. So be it.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I love it. And then lastly, is there anything else you wish you could have shared today?
Well, I can't answer that until we're done.
Yeah.
And I guarantee after we hang up this call, there'll be some things I wish I had said and possibly some things I wish I hadn't said. But, you know, that's life. That's uncertainty for you.
Exactly. That's every podcast
out
for
there,
me.
People.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, thank you so much as always for sharing your time and specifically on this topic.
Always a pleasure, Stu. See you around.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. If you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.